So anyway, I need bail money.
Welcome back to Hoops HD, yep. And as always, David Griggs needs bail money. This is Hoops HD. This is our September podcast coming to you actually during the month of September. We are, we don't normally do it that well, but I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, up here in the middle. Woo-hoo. Joining me, as always, David Griggs on one side, Joby Forts on the other, John Stalica, and from Bracketeer.org, we have Rocco Miller. And we have an interesting topic that is very in the news, very relevant right now that we want to discuss tonight. And that is the recent law that was passed and is currently on the governor's desk, I believe, out in California for potential signing or veto to allow student athletes to require that student athletes be allowed to be compensated for their name, image, and likeness. Basically get endorsement deals, allow student athletes to go out and make a deal with Nike and get their name and get paid for it, or whatever company they want to do. And it's also a potential law in South Carolina that's being batted around, has not gone to their house yet. And just, I believe yesterday, Mark Emmert made a statement claiming that this was an existential threat to the collegiate model of athletics and the biggest threat that the NCAA has faced during his tenure, despite the fact that we have things like FBI trials going on. Yeah. And so that shows you how important that this topic is right now. And I mean, the other big news that came out this week has to do with University of Kansas getting a level one violations levied against them, all having to do with money going to college athletes, and kind of the idea here being, well, maybe if we get a way to pay college athletes, then we wouldn't need to be doing it under the table, and we wouldn't need to be having schools like Kansas facing significant penalties from the notice of allegations. So on that note, I think I just threw a lot of information out there, but we want to kind of discuss.
Practice started yesterday. We are practicing.
We did. At 40 days from the start of the college basketball season. But I want to kind of get each of your takes on this, on the California law, and is this a threat to the NCAA model, or is this a good thing? And Joe, you just popped up on my screen, so let me start with you on this whole topic.
Happy to. I have very strong feelings on this. They might seem incongruous at some points, but fact is, I truly believe strongly that an athlete should be able to profit off their name and likeness. It is there. Just because you sign a letter of intent doesn't mean you should be waiving IP rights away and trademark, et cetera, away. I find that a very uneven negotiation. That being said, and so all of a sudden the athlete groups are very happy with what I just said, but now you're not going to be so happy. I do think the NCAA has a right to regulate it because they are the ones who control the games, who set the stage. If there is a rule, for instance, that it goes into an annuity so that it's not just over that, you know, someone pays a kid X amount of dollars for signing a few autographs or, you know, et cetera, and the money is there then and that now. If the NCAA wants to put in rules on that, they are perfectly allowed to do so, and I'm not necessarily against that. I am against flat out, besides the cost of living stipends that we're talking about for going to school, I don't think students – that athletes should be paid. The fact of the matter is, directly paid. The fact of the matter, because then you want, there's a zillion pieces with it. Title IX, so are you going to pay a football player more because they bring more revenue in than the female volleyball player? You got Title IX issues right there. Right there, you do. And Title IX volleyball, all of a sudden, teams are going to be cutting Title IX sports, you know, and the men's sports to reduce it, you know, to pay for it. It's a very slippery slope, especially in the non-Power Five areas where the revenue is not as great from television, from football and men's basketball, and to a lesser extent, women's basketball. So I think that there are limitations to this. Plus, the last thing I'll say on this topic is everybody says, oh, you know, a scholarship, that's all it is. Talk to Lori Loughlin about how important a scholarship is. I'm serious. You know, we make fun of these people, but pay $500,000. The value of a USC scholarship in the marketplace is $500,000. Okay? That's what it is. That's what Lori Loughlin paid. $500,000 value is pretty good to go play basketball or play football or to yacht or whatever the hell, you know, Lori Loughlin's kids were supposed to be doing. That is a pretty good value because as the NCAA correctly, and I rarely say NCAA and correct in the same sentence, because the NCAA correctly says 99% of them aren't going pro in this. And so you get a dang good education for free. That's a good deal for 99% of the kids out there. I don't want to make rules for the future LeBron James who might want to skip it. Fine, skip college. That's a different topic altogether.
Well, Joby, let me just clarify. You're not saying that there's a Title IX issue with being able to sell your name, image, and likeness. You're talking about if the school actually pays this.
That's where there's.
I'm not sure that's it. Well, the schools are going to say that's not a Title IX issue because if it turns out that student athletes are employees, Title IX deals with equal opportunity to educational opportunity.
You don't want to get to that, but schools will never go to the point where they are employees. And the reason why is because of the unionization issue, you don't want to go that down that road.
They will if the courts tell them they have to.
This Supreme Court will never, ever, ever say that. So wait until Justice Thomas retires 20 years from now, and then we'll talk.
Rocco, let me bring you in here on the same thing. Do you agree with Joby that, yes, name, image, and likeness, we should allow these athletes to be compensated for it if they can? Because, again, part of this is you've actually got to go out and get that endorsement deal. You've got to have somebody come to you and say, hey, I will pay you to put your face on the latest EA Sports title or whatever it is.
Yeah, first of all, it's a privilege to even be in the same discussion as Joby on such a topic. This is a very loaded topic, as we all know. So I appreciate you guys having me on tonight. But I would say I mostly agree, almost completely agree with what Joby said in regards to, the special talent out there, being able to go out there and make a profit. I also think there could be, and then also the other part that Joby said about, the NCAA, still controlling the show and making this, whether it goes into an annuity, where the money goes. I think for basketball, it's a very different discussion than it is for football. Like if we're talking about Johnny Manziel, who has to stay at Texas A&M for 3 years versus Zion Williamson, who's only at Duke for 6 months, it's a whole different discussion. It's a lot more money involved. But I do think also another idea for the NCAA as they look to solve this gigantic problem would be to make this a positive wherever they can. I think one way they could do that is by requiring anybody that does earn any additional income from their NIL to be required to take a money management course or some type of financial advisory type of course while they're in college. Because I think the biggest thing that happens to athletes that wouldn't be to of value is historically, so many athletes end up broke and without an education. So they can kind of flip the script on that and say, hey, listen, you guys can make money off your name, image, and likeness. By the way, that profit comes from other organizations like a Nike, like a Wheaties box, like your local, plumbing store if you're the star at William & Mary, right? So, you can do that, but we want to make it educational. We want you to also understand how to manage this money as you go along. I think that would be a good element to add to it for them as they look to solve a gigantic problem.
Yeah, I'll tell you that I have in front of me, I'm just taking a look at it right now. It's the NCAA Board of Governors put together a letter in response to the California law a couple weeks ago.
David, I'm glad you're looking at it. Are you talking about the one that they issued today?
It was actually written, dated September 11, but I haven't.
Oh, okay.
I just want to read a couple quotes for it, David, and get your response for it. But it starts off by knowing that the 1,100 schools that make up the NCAA have always, in everything we do, supported a level playing field for all student athletes. Goes on a little bit later to say that California Senate Bill 206, which is the law we're discussing, would upend that balance. If the bill becomes law and California's 58 NCAA schools are compelled to allow an unrestricted name, image, and likeness scheme, it would erase the critical distinction between college and professional athletics And because it gives those schools an unfair recruiting advantage would result in them eventually becoming unable to compete in NCAA competitions. It goes on from there, David, but that's a real strong language saying, almost threatening, isn't it? That we may not let you in the NCAA anymore.
It is threatening. At least the language of it is. Now, how much teeth does it really have? The problem with that letter, and there's some other things in there too, Let me back up a little bit. Regardless of whether or not you think college athletes should be paid, whether or not it meets some ideal or ethic of amateurism, that is an interesting discussion. But I think we're almost past that now, and we're on to what does the NCAA have to do to keep any sort of control over this? You can't. I mean. Do they not understand what a law is? The argument here is that, essentially the NCAA or one of the stronger arguments is that they are in violation of antitrust laws. We had heard that about a year ago or so when we had Andy Schwartz, I believe it was, on the show, and he explained that, in his opinion, it constituted price fixing or wage fixing. And for them to go after this law like that and then to use language that isn't even factually correct, all 1,100 schools do not complete on an even plane. There's three divisions. There's three different rule books. They don't even compete under the same rules. And the idea that the playing field is level is almost laughable. And when you're trying to figure out what does the NCAA need to do in order to maintain control, and they fail to make any sort of a legal, actual argument, in my opinion, that would win if this lands in court, it's kind of discouraging. And it makes me think that if they don't make concessions that I know that they don't want to make, then they may end up losing control of everything and simply doing event management.
Well, David, as I stated, I agree with the use of name and likeness, you know, et cetera, the
right. Incident
having right to do it. However, that is my fairness view. That's not my legal view. Legal view is that the NCAA can tell California to go pound sand because they have a right. They have a right to require their members to do particular requirements to join the NCAA. The antitrust angle is very interesting, but until we get to that point, which is way down the road legally,
I think we
the
get
short
there
term,
is
they could cut off California institutions. They most certainly could tell Pac-12 if UCLA is your representative or et cetera from the Pac-12. Well, Pac-12, you're gonna have to find a new rep. You better send Utah instead or whatever.
I don't know, they
could say someone because they were deemed cheating is no longer eligible. Like Missouri is not eligible to participate, you know, and have an extra game for a bowl or participate in the BCS. They can set their own rules for who gets to participate.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair.
Okay.
I agree with you on the fairness, but legally they do have a right.
The response to that is going to be, well, the rules that we are being disqualified for are against the law anyway, and we are taking you to court, which has not been a friendly place for the NCAA the last few years. Just over the summer, I think it was July or August, a settlement that they did not dispute. They had to pay, was it over $200 million or $208 million to former football and basketball players for using their name, image, and likeness. That does not bode well as, you know, to have that on the books. If they try and ban a school from championship play on the grounds that they were allowed players their name, image, and likeness, isn't that a hell of a reference for those schools if they take the NCAA to court? The fact that they lost already?
The NCAA has total control for who gets to participate in their competitions. While they – remember, nonprofits in this case, but nonprofit corporations have the representation of people and they have right of assembly. And that's what it kind of comes down to with the argument. They have a right to say, you get – as long as they're not discriminatory in other – protected class ways, which that is not the case here. In other words, you know, race, et cetera. They have a right to say, hey, the people who want to participate with us have to follow our rules. And you can definitely argue antitrust. I think there's some you know, strong arguments that come with like antitrust, et cetera. But that is, that's a long developed case. If the NCAA cut it off tomorrow, at least in the short run, they would be winning. They couldn't get, I doubt California could get injunctive relief.
Well, but, you know, maybe California just says, hey, well, forget you. We'll do our own championship. We'll name our own champion. But, and now here comes South Carolina, passes the same law. 10 other states follow. And Joby, now some of the NCAA's got nothing left to do because they're left with Hawaii, North Dakota, and Rhode Island.
That's a different
kettle of fish. Chad, let me jump in here about South Carolina. It hasn't progressed nearly to the degree that the California one has, but it is offering more. It is offering name, image, likeness, and up to $5,000. So it's essentially California, plus $5,000.
Right. The proposal also would allow the schools to pay a $5,000 a year stipend in addition to the name, image, likeness. Also include the name, image, likeness is for both laws is sponsorships, autograph sales, that type of thing.
Okay, so do you see what's sort of happening here? Say Texas comes along and says, well, we'll pay $10,000. In North Carolina, they like their basketball. Well, we don't want to fall behind, so we'll pay $10,000 in incentives. And I think, like, you're just going to see states continue to jump on board with this and trying to one-up. Now, the one that New York introduced was absolutely ridiculous. I think it was as student athletes would be guaranteed a percentage of the revenue that they generate. I don't even think that's legal, but there is, I mean, one of the things that I think the NCAA needs to be braced for is how do they answer this question? If schools were allowed to pay student athletes, would they do it? And the answer is yes. And then again, well, doesn't that constitute wage fixing if organizations like the NLRB and others, and I think there's going to be more pushes through the courts to try and get athletes ruled legally employees on the grounds that they, and again, there's other people that know more about this than I do.
This is an area where I have at least some expertise.
Okay.
In that particular case,
let me finish because there's something else I want your opinion on.
Even the Clinton appointed judges said that was a ridiculous decision by the NLRB.
Okay.
That's a long shot.
The long shot is they perform work. They do so under control and that the person that controls them benefits from the work they do.
Right.
That is going to be the legal argument for it. And can the NCAA, I mean, I'm sure there's an argument against that can win, but call me crazy. I just don't have a lot of faith in the NCAA these days.
Well, let me kind of circle back to another issue that was just mentioned here. And Sleek, let me bring you in on this. Because when you look at college athletics, especially basketball and football, the conferences are making a ton of money. The TV networks are making a ton of money. The universities are making a ton of money. Everybody's making a ton of money. The coaches are making tons of money. Who's not making money? The people that are actually producing the product, they're getting nothing. Isn't there a fundamental unfairness to the entire system?
Well, this whole thing started, let's say, 2006 or 2007 when the Big Ten network set up, because that was a major game changer as far as bringing in more money for conferences like the Big Ten. The Pac-12 followed suit, and then the SEC, and starting this fall, the ACC has launched their own network. And woo! The University of Texas.
For those that can watch it, but go ahead.
But I think the whole point is it's bringing in a lot more money than, let's say, 1988, 1978, back when there was much more limited coverage. We've also gotten to a point where we don't even take teams off of TV anymore because it's going to unfairly punish other conference members as well, as another example.
So Rocco, is this entire system just flawed? Is there something? Do we just need to rewrite the book?
I think, in a sense, yeah. And I mean, especially in basketball, I know we're focused on basketball here on the show. Mm-hmm. There's a larger issue that's developed, and I think it all kind of stems from that. I think just, you know, recently with the infrastructure being as it is, and with the one and done being such a big thing with the top recruits. over the past, you know, ever since that rule changed around the same time, it's created a bubble. And within the bubble, you've got guys now, top prospects like a RJ Hampton, who from the time he was in fourth grade, his dad started helping him set up his own brand through his own team. And even though everybody from Kansas who thought they were getting him to Kentucky and everybody else were there and giving him everything he could want to, from a college basketball standpoint, it made all the sense in the world for him to go play in Australia and get a shoe deal from China. There's just this massive amount of money in the sport that trickles down from the NBA. There's also, you know, the commitment that Turner and CBS made to the NCAA basketball tournament that we talk about during tournament time, where conferences are earning shares, and the amount of money involved in that is massive. And so now the amount of at-large bids each conference get has a lot more on the line than it ever has. And that number just goes up astronomically year over year. And so what we're seeing is a bubble created for more avenues for more for up-and-coming prospects. We already see now two of the top 50 for next year's recruiting cycle preferring to actually just develop on their own with trainers instead of play college basketball. And they're predicting that over five of the top 50 will not play college, and potentially up to 10. And that's just in next year's recruiting cycle. So the NCAA has to make a decision. All the facts are in their face right now to work with. They understand, to Jovi's point, he knows a lot more on the legal side than I would. Will understand in layman's terms, but I think if they want to push this down the road, I don't think the California bill can actually go into effect after all the appeals and everything else till 2023. That gives them even 3 years till that's a real potential issue. If that becomes a foregone conclusion, they still have time to prepare for it. I think it's ultimately in the NCAA's best interest to keep the infrastructure the way it is from a conference standpoint and from a membership standpoint. So I think as time goes on, they're going to start to get a tiny bit more flexible and incorporate some real strategy if it's important to them and to their broadcast partners like Turner, CBS being the forefront of the tournament. Do we care enough to keep this top talent playing in March Madness, or are we okay with potentially 20% or more of that talent pool leaving and playing either overseas or in a league like an HBL? And I think that's in front of them right now. You can see all the trends, and you can read about what the recruits are doing today.
Yeah, Joby, as an attorney, you've made some good points here. The NCAA, if they called you up and asked for your help, would you give it to them? Because I think that they might need it. Because yeah, I don't well, think they well, have anybody.
Here's my biggest advice to the NCAA. The comparison is the legalization of marijuana. It was very taboo just a generation
ago. I highly recommend that for the NCAA.
But now 31 is states and jurisdictions in the District of Columbia have some form of legalization. But in many cases, what's happened is the infrastructure was poorly thought out. Was legalization or not? And because there was such resistance to it from the opposition to it, actually creating a structure has failed miserably. And you have marijuana, the level of LSD that could really hurt people. What you need
don't knock
is
some it till you form, try. It's pretty good.
Which is, I use that as an example to, you need to prep for the regulation. The NCAA needs to understand, at least on name, image, and likeness, that they are in a losing spot. And if they realize that they are in the long term, even if it's not a losing spot tomorrow, it's a losing spot in a few years, they need to get a hold of it.
Yes.
Now. They need to have some policies. I throw out annuity. I'm not saying that's what I'd support. But those sorts of ideas need to be discussed now. It can't be where a situation goes, okay, name and likeness, and then, the University of Alabama boosters – are writing $500,000 to every kid who wants a freaking autograph. That that's not – there has to be some reasonableness, or it essentially is paying players. If you want to not pay players, you better work within the construct of image and likeness and get it right. I'm like you. I don't – I don't think they will. I think they're looking ahead, and we're going to have situations where people are going to get hurt in some way, whether it's a failure, as Rocco pointed out, to manage money, or we've completely left the barn door open, and it's, we might as well throw the whole idea of a scholarship being what is the worth of going to college athletics. You might as well throw that out the door.
And that's great, because I think what you're really hitting on there, Joby, is that there is a solution to all of this, which is the NCAA's got to get on this right now, craft their own rules, and get on, and start talking with California lawmakers and making certain that this law gets amended to be in sync with a rule that can apply to all 50 states. Because that's the only way we solve this, isn't it?
Yes, I agree.
And the other thing is, the ultimate question is, well, who represents the players? Like, who represents the student athletes? And I don't want to say that this is universally true, but a lot of lawyers, and we all know how much we hate lawyers, particularly Chad and Joby, but one of the reasons they're pushing this is for their own selfish reasons. And the settlement that just went out over the summer, I don't know why that was not more of a red flag. And I don't know why that the NCAA wasn't at least exploring the possibility that they can't keep control of this if they don't do exactly what you just said and try and craft their own rules, even if it means making concessions they don't want to make, and doing so in a way that the players and the people that represent them actually say, yeah, that's fair. That's good. We're happy now. And then we can kind of get back to business.
Is there any other solutions than doing that? I mean, Rocco, is there anything?
I like where the conversation's headed here, because I completely agree with they've got to have something in place, at least behind closed doors. I think the strategy, from what I can tell, is if they can kick the can down the road, so to speak, like they already have with all the FBI responses and all of that, do that with this until it becomes a major emergency, but they have their plan now on how they're going to respond. I think that's the way that they're going to look at it from a maximizing revenue standpoint. If they go ahead and just go to a model now that allows people to profit and it cuts into their own profits at all, I think they're going to kick the can down the road as far as they can, because they want to maximize their revenues. Because look how much money Mark Emmert's making himself this year. So yeah. every little bit they give up, it hits their own pocket. So it's a really tough thing for them to do. So I think what they're doing is they're getting their ducks in a row, or at least they should be. And at the absolute last second, when they have to make a move, they're going to know what the plan is. At least that's what they should be doing. But I think the only reason why they haven't even released any kind of inch yet is because they want to maximize profit for as long as they possibly can, whether that's at the end of this year or in 3 years.
You're giving a lot of faith to the NCAA to actually like have a game plan.
mentioned kicking the can down the road. It could be Emmert just wants to kick the can down the road till he retires. Then it's someone else's problem.
Could be the case. That I think that's what I'm concerned about, because that could definitely be the case.
Yeah.
Well, Salika, let me bring you back in here again. Do you agree with this solution? Is there other solutions that out there? Where do you see this all going?
I could possibly see in 5 or 10 years someone possibly replacing the NCAA, because we may be seeing some differences among states like California, New York, and South Carolina. Suppose there are states like, hypothetically Indiana, where they don't allow for student athletes to profit off name, image, and likeness. Pretty soon we'd probably need Congress to get some laws on a more federal level to at least get some unification among the colleges and universities.
Yeah, that's a huge
problem. I think what you'll see quicker is that football will come into play, and you'll see the break off of the Power Five, and there is no NCAA. If it gets to the point where the NCAA is unmanageable, football will and the Power Five schools will make this play.
The thing about that, Joby, is that they already have autonomy, and it's my understanding that if the Power Five wanted to allow players' name, image, and likeness, they could do it and not have to. They could do that without breaking off.
Right. I think, but getting back to Sleeka's point here, the idea of each state having its own books and its own rule book and everything, it's not going to be very conducive, because why would a top college athlete want to go play in Indiana when he could get money to play in California? It's right. not going to happen. And that kind of gets back to Mark Emmert's point in the letter that he wrote is that you're going to have, if you just let California's law go as is without changing the rules across the board, every legitimate student athlete that, that has a chance to sell his name, image, and likeness is going to go play for UCLA, USC, I don't know, UC Irvine, Cal Poly, somewhere, yeah. right?
Or the
now
other
let me
state.
Emphasize, this is not, I'm just throwing out a hypothetical as far as the state of Indiana goes, but I am pointing out a potential problem down the road.
And it's very realistic that Indiana would be a holdout, obviously.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. Mark Emmert in the NCAA, I not just him, but like the whole board of governors signed the letter. In my opinion, in order to make me feel better, and that's really the only person I'm concerned about is how I feel, you have got to do better than just say, well, we don't like this, and if you pass this law, it's going to mess us up. Which is what the letter reeked of. I mean, you need to come up, in my opinion, with some sort of plan or legal strategy if you're going to fight it, or some sort of plan that makes it fair. And that might even mean giving everybody to a degree across the board their name, image, and likeness.
Well, he did say in there that he thought that, the Board of Governors thought that the California law was unconstitutional.
Yes,
that's unconstitutional to for people to make money based on their talents.
He didn't explain how it was unconstitutional.
I think
when they say things like that, it's just like, yeah, we can win this fight, but like this fight can be won, but only by people that know how to fight. Do you know how to fight when you're making a comment like that?
Yeah, the only even semblance, it's a ridiculous comment, is if some way through the federal higher education laws they can squeeze themselves in and say, well, California's interfering and differentiating itself on commerce, which is the dominion of the national government, not the state government. But if the national government's silent on something, marijuana, once again on the actual legalization at the end of the day, then, sorry, you can do it within your own state boundaries.
Well, Joby, are you then saying that, like, if I'm just a regular old poli-sci major who suddenly somebody wants to give me $20 to put my face on a billboard, I can't do it, I'll get thrown out of school?
Exactly. I mean, yeah, you're hitting on the ridiculousness of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I have a cool blog that a lot of people like, yeah, you know, and some guy wants to advertise on it. If you're a poli-sci major, you can do it, and you're really personable, et cetera, and you like to come on Hoops HD, and, you know, someone wants to give us money, and, yeah.
Anyone that wants to give us money, we do accept.
Yeah, we accept money. <Mike. laughs>
We're not in school, unfortunately.
I guess that, a little more for each of you here. I think we've covered a lot of ground, a lot of good conversation, but any other thoughts on this entire topic here?
Chad, you and I, and oftentimes Stalika and even Rocco, we have our Under the Radar show that we do every week throughout the season. And while they're sort of running up a much steeper hill as it is, but there's been some breakthroughs. We saw multiple teams get not just inside the bubble this year, but up into the top half of the bracket, namely Wofford and Buffalo. And it's not that unusual to see under the radar teams in the rankings in the top half of the bracket and inside the bubble. But if you go back and look at the 2001, 2002, 2000 NCAA brackets, there may have been one. I think in two of those 3 years, there were zero. If name, image, and likeness comes through, do we sort of go back to that simply because those schools, unless you watch Under the Radar, aren't as visible? So their likeness and names aren't going to be worth as much as even, say, a mid-level or poor power conference team?
I don't think so, David, just because Ja Morant is still at Murray State. You know, until the transfer rules, that's where that might have a different issue altogether. You're still going to have people who are under the radar recruits who turn out to be outstanding making some of these. And you have, like at Wofford, it was a system as much as it's some very good players, but also a system that created it. I think you'll still see that.
Right. Let me say this, Joe. Like, one of the selling points or attempted selling points, if you've been around the Ohio Valley or the Horizon League, not those specifically, but leagues like that, is that you can sell your program as opposed to being at a mid-level or low-level Power 5 conference and possibly not playing or contributing, you can come here, you can play a lot, and you can be on a team that competes at the top of a worse league, but like at the top of the league. And a lot of kids, I think, do make that choice. It's like, well, I'd rather win at a mid-level under-the-radar conference than lose at a power conference. But that, I think that it might make it harder to get players. I could foresee that being a possibility, but sure. I'm not psychic. I mean, we'll see how it plays.
How many players, I'll pick on Chad here, and I'm dead serious, how many players choose, though, the Wofford types, the Buffalo types, over a Rutgers? You know, I mean, I don't think that still happens a ton.
But you just mentioned Job Morant. I don't know. There's some guy that played at a Davidson school that was nothing, that got a little bit, that had a pretty good NBA career, I think.
Yeah.
Curry something or other.
Yeah, but he was, despite having a dad who played in the NBA, he wasn't, and his dad's alma mater being at the time crappy, Virginia Tech. They still didn't offer what is now one of the greatest shooters in the history of the game. It's crazy that they didn't, but they didn't. You're still going to have the Currys of the world, the John Morants, et cetera. I think we'll find their way there because they are simply overlooked. But that is obviously, you can count on one hand those sort of, you know, NBA lottery picks that come from there that aren't overseas weirdness, you know, sort of thing happen.
But I also look at a place like the Patriot League, for example, where you had a Donald Foyle in the 90s. Yeah. You had C.J. McCollum at the beginning of this decade. Mm-hmm. I mean, those players are once in a generation, but by the same token, how many guys from the Patriot League are going to be looking at other places?
Right. Yeah, I think it's always going to happen. Go ahead, Rocco.
I think programs like that, I think, well, maybe not the Patriot League examples, but some of the ones you guys mentioned. Plus, you know, I'm down the road from St. Mary's. They get, if you have a good prospect coming out of Australia, good luck beating St. Mary's for that guy. Most of the Australian national team this year was, I think, four St. Mary's players. Randy Bennett's got a pipeline. You look at Buffalo. Buffalo had a great recruiting class coming in this year until Nate Oates took the Alabama job. There's a kid out of Seattle that had six Pac-12 offers and chose Buffalo. Had no ties to New York. So some guys are just recruiting at a different level. There's all different reasons how and why that happens. But the top mid-major programs are creating niches for themselves. New Mexico State's an example where they're waiting on kids to fall out of a big program, and they're taking pretty much anybody and everybody in and bringing them to a place like Las Cruces where they're away from distractions, and they have a great team every year. So, I mean, I think there's just, a lot of variables, and it's a little bit loaded for some of those programs. But I think in general, that larger bubble discussion that I was kind of introducing earlier is where we might see some bigger change, and it's already beginning. So, like this year, Kansas and Oregon were two programs that missed out on their big targets recruiting-wise, and they're still coming into this year as potentially top 10 teams. Because then they were able to go ahead and get guys from the class. Yeah, the reclassification thing's becoming a huge trend. And then also guys that are eligible to grad transfer, they're basically getting re-recruited, and they almost have to tell their current head coach, hey, I don't want any more phone calls. There's a few articles about that going around. But more kids are leaving for the bigger program than staying with the Anthony Lamb, who actually did stay with Vermont. You know, he got a million phone calls this summer to play for a Power 5. So it's really interesting. But the more that top talent that either skips college basketball altogether, the more that there's a funnel happening, and the mid majors and the low majors just become a minor league system. And that's what's happened to like the NEC, where they lost almost every NEC program, I think two summers ago, lost at least a starter or two to transfer.
I like the Anthony Lamb comparison, because that's pretty similar to Mike Dom at South Dakota State last year, who was also a game changer.
But then Mooney starts in the national title game.
exactly.
Yeah.
I guess not. Now, let me run through each of you here for any other final thoughts. We're just about out of time here, but on this entire topic or anything else that's going on in the college sports world. Joby, let me start with you.
Well, you know, speaking of, you know, incentives to go to school, one topic which I'm sure is hot for a lot of people is what's happening at the University of Kansas.
Are they playing Mizzou? Mizzou's back on the schedule? Is that what you're about to say?
Where's the buzzer?
David won't let them play Mizzou. But, yeah, this is the issues, and we're waiting on other allegations. NC State's received theirs. Kansas has received theirs. Let's not kid ourselves. LSU and Arizona are imminent. I mean, you know, let's not be silly and think that they aren't. It will be very interesting how that plays in, you know, how that relates to the discussion in California, how the two, because at the end of the day, Kansas, it's about paying someone under the table. And I think even if you go even to the extreme where you have image and likeness, even a pay scale, et cetera. The fact of the matter is you will still have, there is no end to it. You will, you know, kids can get, you know, the top prospects can get $50,000 or $100,000 for their image and likeness. There will still be people coming out of the woodwork to offer more because
exactly.
They want to win. There is no end stop to this. That's why, to harken back to what I mentioned earlier, there has to be some rules in place and some ability that if people cross the line on those rules, you still have the ability to punish them and prevent them from postseason, from a postseason experience.
Rocco, your thoughts?
Yeah, Joby was on the same line as what I was thinking for final thought. I just wanted to come back to David's question, you know, what happens to Louisville and Kansas and NC State and the others once a couple of years goes by. And, you know, even with what we know now, at least according to the FBI findings and all that, you know, there was 30 to 50 schools involved, some of them much heavier involved or caught than others. But I think what we see here is an entire system, grassroots system that, you know, facilitates basically all the programs that have any kind of not all the programs, but the majority of programs that are experiencing different levels of success, especially in recruiting. And so I think there's an issue across the board. You can't penalize all, you know, 40 out of the top 75 teams and tell them they're all not going to the tournament 1 year. So, you know, they've got to come up with different ways to address it. I think again, the punishments lately that have come out in the last 2 to 3 investigations, whether it be football or basketball, besides Missouri, which the football team is not allowed to go to postseason, have really just been about going backwards and having banners taken down and different types of fines, maybe a scholarship or two. So, you know, I'm really curious to see what they do about it, because I don't think just taking postseason away from 40 of the top 75 is going to be a viable solution. It's going to kill their, you know, ratings come tournament time, that kind of thing. So I guess my final thought is I'm curious to see how they really do deal with that.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be interesting. Sleeka, let me throw it over to you.
We talk about recruiting violations as it relates to Kansas, but I'm going to one-up you and go in a slightly different direction. There is one coach that has gone on for, 4 years now, has – one postseason appearance in the CIT, is going to begin the season with a 3-game suspension because of recruiting violations. But somehow, because this is bizarre world and it's DePaul, he's in the process of getting a contract extension. Isn't it amazing what a potential positive recruiting can do? But by the same token, historically, if you're going to beat DePaul and having wins vacated, shouldn't you at least be getting to the NCAA tournament first?
Shouldn't you at least have wins to get wins vacated? David, let me throw it over to you.
what's the best way to encapsulate this? I have more questions than I do answers. You hear all this language, this is going to radically change the game, and I understand why people think that. If players get paid, it wouldn't be the same. If we give them name, image, and likeness, we have to regulate it. But I think that there's another reality that not many people are tuned into, and that's sort of like the under-the-table sort of, you know, the what goes on in the dark and behind the scenes. There's over 50%, not much more, but a little more than half of all D1 players ultimately end up playing pro basketball and making more than $60,000. So a lot, it's not just the top NBA prospects that are targeted and funneled money to, and that have the attention of agents. Agents that represent players that play overseas want access to players as well. And I don't want to, you know, when half of them are basically potential targets for agents or shoe companies or apparel companies or foreign teams, how many of them do you think are getting something that they're not supposed to be getting, or that's against the rule, that's going on behind the scenes? I'm not saying it's everybody, but I'm saying that it's way, way, way more than what most people would probably guess. I saw someone say that it was less than 1% of all college players that are probably getting paid. I think it's more like 15 or 20%. So there's another part of me that says, if these new rules went into place and players were allowed their name, image, and likeness and access to agents, it may not be any different at all. It may not look any different.
Yeah.
I don't know. Interesting thought.
That is interesting. I got to tell you that personally, you know, if you'd asked me the same, if we had the same conversation 5-6 years ago with me, I would have said, no, we got to preserve the amateurism model. We got to preserve the NCAA because, you know, I've always been a throwback type of person to that. But I'm convinced now as well. We've got to allow these kids to find a way to get money here, because just as David just said, it's going to happen anyhow. So why not regulate it? Just like marijuana, I guess. But, I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. I think we've had a great conversation here tonight. We'll get this posted on the website. Obviously, we've got a lot of content.
It's already posted to the website if people are watching it. Yeah,
true.
It's already there.
We are going to have a lot of content coming up during the month of October, season previews. We may have a special podcast with a special guest coming up soon as well. David and I are working on that. But again, thanks for everybody for joining us, and we will talk to you again real soon.